And welcome back. I'm Jeff Rentz. Another 3 hours of remarkable radio coming your way tonight. Our first 2 hours tonight with Clifford Carnicum back for an update on the chemtrail controversy coast to coast and in many places around the world, even down in Australia and New Zealand. We're getting reports now, so stay tuned for that and much more as we get rolling tonight for our 3 hours as we continue. 3 hours a night, 6 nights a week, coast to coast, and worldwide on the internet as well. As many of you know who have followed this program for years, it is a showcase for citizens just like you and just like me who are out there doing work that our government ought to be doing for us, or at the very least our elected leaders ought to be making happen for us, but they are not. And this program over the years has prided itself on being able to present, in all humility, the work of some true heroic American citizens. And another one of those gentlemen is on the program tonight. He is back for a second visit. He is one of my heroes. He is putting his own heart and soul and time and life's blood into this work of trying to resolve and to solve the riddle, the mystery, and the threat of chemical trails being sprayed above cities, urban areas, and even the countryside, primarily around these United States. His name is Clifford Carnicum, and his website is linked to his name at my homepage. And I want to welcome back one of the great people of our time, Clifford Carnicum. Welcome, Cliff.
Yeah, thank you very much for the gracious introduction. I appreciate having the opportunity to be on your show again.
Well, it's my pleasure and always easy for me to tell the truth. The last time we were on, we had a major agenda of items to get through. We got through about half of them. But what has happened, Clifford, in the interim since your last talk here, which was just marvelous and is in my archives for all of you who might want to hear it? What's new?
I would say in a very general way, Jeff, that my work has been focusing on chemistry and physics quite a bit. We must understand that I'm an individual researcher. I do not have extended resources. I do not have a support team. So I'm an individual who is conducting research within my means and within my resources and my skills.
Sure.
And so this is the direction that I have gone over the last couple of months now, and which I assume we can talk at more length during our conversation.
Uh-huh, indeed.
But the summary is that I have focused on the chemistry aspects of this affair, because the bottom line is that we need to know what it is. And talk is fairly cheap, and we've had quite a bit of talk. We have a couple of years of history behind us now.
And we got a zillion pictures.
Right. And there's a need to pin things down. And so that's where my effort has gone, and that's what I assume we can get into in more detail.
Absolutely. Now, I continue to get email from people around the country. And for those of you who may not be up on this, if you're behind the curve at all about chemtrails, let me just read this one short email for you to give you an idea of just a fraction of the input I'm getting from many listeners and site visitors out there. Our website gets over 5 million hits a month, and you ought to see the list. Same thing with Clifford's website, which is carnicum.com, C-A-R-N-I-C-O-M.com. His guest list, so to speak, is a who's who of our taxpayer-supported government, military, and intelligence agencies. Same on my site. Here's a note from Carol C. in Michigan, and it's rather short. Let me read it. Dear Jeff, I have never written in before, but I have been keeping up with the chemtrail issue for the past year now. I notice such skies here in Michigan, but have not experienced the sinus flu symptoms that many other people have. I note with interest a letter and pictures now on your website sent in by the United States Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, who is retired from Pennsylvania. And that story is up in headlines right now. Last week, my husband and I spent a week in Pittsburgh, and in fact, we stayed within 2 miles of the airport. On Friday, we too noticed the excessive trails over that city, and in fact, they did not seem to relate at all to the landing pattern of airplanes at the airport. Into the bargain, as the week progressed, my sinuses became more and more stuffed, and my eyes puffed up like I had allergies. We left on Sunday in the morning, and only since being home for 2 days has my throat stopped finally being scratchy, and my nose has begun to clear up. I have no expertise or cannot begin to find a reason for government or whomever involvement with this phenomena of chemtrails. I can only attest that it is real, and there is definitely a correlation between people feeling sick and heavy trail coverage of the skies. Sincerely, Carol C. And Cliff, I know you've had countless emails along the same line, but for our listeners who may be new to this, I wanted to lay that on the table as well.
Thank you, Jeff. And if I can, I would actually like to offer an apology to folks that it's simply a fact that I'm not able to respond to most of the emails that come in because of my time limitations.
Sure.
And I hope that people understand that. I do read them all, but there is an apology that's due simply because I cannot keep up with email, and my goal is to do the best I can to get the most accurate information that I can.
Understood. All right. Now, tell us about the chemistry and the physics that you've been able to assemble in the last several months since you were on.
Sure, Jeff. And if I can start, what I'd like to do is establish maybe number one, an objective and a goal that you stated at the beginning of the program, and that is the burden of this research, the burden of the investigation needs to be shifted. And I am hoping that that is one of the objectives that shows like yours can accomplish, is to start to shift the playing field away from individuals having to devote their lives and efforts towards exactly that work that you said our government should be doing. And it's quite clear at this stage that that work and that research and that investigation has been deliberately avoided. So that's a primary goal, I think, in terms of where we're heading beyond the presentation of information. There has to be a shift in the momentum, a shift in the activity level, and a shift of the burden and effort to those officials that we have elected and those that we pay for to represent us.
If I can just jump in for a moment, the the formal response not only from the Air Force but from the EPA, was it, pertaining to chemtrails and complaints therein? They were practically form letters. They were so abusively insulting to read that I put them up on my website. They're up on yours as well.
That's correct, Jeff. And I guess one of the things I'm trying to do here is establish a couple of foundations to set the pace for where we go, because there really is no purpose served at this point by endless debate as to whether or not the phenomenon and the physical material exists. And what I'd like to do very quickly is outline some of the primary reasons that we know that we are dealing with material.
Sure.
It's basically not water vapor. I mean, the basic point of contention would be that this has been going on all along, and this is just water vapor.
Sure.
We're simply way past that, but I'd like to lay out at least some of those principles upon which we know that it is not water.
Well said.
And then we'll go into that in more detail. The first of these, and there's four or five of these I have. The first is simply the historical record. If one makes the claim that this is water vapor and that these are normal contrails, then you need to present a historical record of that fact to have any merit in your case. This means since jet engines were invented at the close of World War II, it should be simple and easy to demonstrate a relatively continuous case of non-dissipating, persistent, continuous trails across the entire country and world, and there should be a photographic body of evidence that does that.
Yes.
It simply isn't there, and so that's number one. You need a historical record. It's not there. The dramatic changes that have been documented began very sharply at the beginning of 1999. You're dealing in a whole new arena of physics and aircraft activity. Number two is that relative humidity studies that I have done, which we talked about some last time.
Yes.
And which I'd like to tie into the work tonight.
Very important, yes.
Relative humidity studies that I have done in the Santa Fe, New Mexico, a high desert area, physically demonstrate by the laws of physics that it simply is not water vapor. You're speaking of these trails, which are forming under conditions of rather extreme low relative humidity. Commonly an average of 30% in this area, and quite often ranging between 10 and 60%, encompassing probably 90% of the values. And by the way, these values and data that I'm speaking of, they come at flight altitude. I'm not talking about ground observations.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about balloon radio sound observations taken at flight altitude.
Yes.
So these studies are important from a meteorological standpoint, And there is yet, I have yet to hear an argument that refutes my work as well as the six sources, including NASA and the Naval Postgraduate School, that simply says, it doesn't indicate, it says that such formation is physically impossible under these conditions of low humidity.
And I want all of you skeptics out there who are honestly open-minded, take careful note of what Clifford is saying. He is quoting now from very solid, legitimate military and meteorological sources that this cannot happen under the conditions he has observed and recorded. Okay.
Number three would be to take note of the fact that, in a physical sense, there is a difference between the physics and chemistry of the dissipation of water vapor and the formation of a cloud.
Mm-hmm.
They are separate physical processes, and they need to be looked at independently. And a major point of, let's say, contradiction is that the size of particles that has been studied to be released from aircraft generally ranges between 30 and 200 microns. When I throw out a term, I will always try to explain myself, and please remind me if I don't. But a micron is a unit of size. And to give you an idea, a human hair, is roughly 100 microns thick. So most particles that are released from aircraft, solid particles, are in the neighborhood of 30 to 200 microns, with a vast majority falling probably less than 100 microns.
These would be normal particles?
Yes, right.
Normal water vapor particles.
Well, more in the sense
particles.
of exhaust particles, products of combustion.
Okay, expended fuel, whatever.
You have water that would come out in addition to that.
All right.
And we have also established that cloud formation is a nuclei process. That is, in other words, clouds form as a result of having a nuclei present, meaning
yes.
a small particle.
Yes,
clouds,
okay.
The formation of clouds requires that. That's how
yep.
they form.
Yep. All right. Stand by right there, Clifford.
Sure.
We have to pause. And the point well made and well taken, I hope. Between 30 and 200 microns, the normal size of particles coming from normal jet exhaust. And figure a virus is anywhere from half to 1 micron. That's pretty well an average size parameter for viruses. 0.5 to 1 micron. All right, we're going to be right back in just a couple minutes. I'm Jeff Rentz, coast to coast on over 200 stations now, as we wend our way through the week to you, bringing you new and unusual information every night, always worth your consideration, agree or disagree. It's right here, and you'll find it virtually nowhere else in the so-called mainstream media. Be right back. Back. I'm Jeff Rentz, your host, your tour guide each week as we run through 6 nights a week, 18 hours a week, plus our Saturday night shows, 6 hours worth, over 80 hours of radio a month streaming your way. Compliments courtesy of the fabulous Talk Radio Network, probably the only network in America with a conscience and a heart. We're talking with Clifford Carnicom about the major obvious differences, the scientific differences between contrails and chemtrails. Go ahead, Clifford.
Thank you, Jeff. And the reason that the last statement was important regarding the size of particles reported to be emitted from aircraft ranging from 30 to 200 microns,
mm-hmm.
and that report comes from the Max Planck Institute. Forgive me if I have the pronunciation wrong. But
Planck, you got it.
That's probably the most esteemed atmospheric research organization in the world.
Yes.
And the reason this statement is important, because if you look at cloud formation, most cloud nuclei are 2 to 3 tenths of a micron. This is a very significant fact, because if anyone is to make the claim that what we're speaking about is some type of normal cloud mm-hmm. nucleation process,
mm-hmm.
the size of the materials is so disparate that once again you have a physical impossibility to occur.
All right, let me repeat that for our listeners. Normal jet exhaust spews particulates 30 to 200 microns. To form clouds, you need micron sizes of 3 tenths up to 2 microns.
That's correct. The average size of cloud nuclei particles is extremely small, at a whole different magnitude level than what we're speaking of on that emission. And so, once again, it becomes obvious in many ways that there's a clear separation between the question of, are we dealing with water vapor, are we dealing with particulate or aerosol matter? And two more, and these will come directly from the Air Force itself, and actually from a letter that has recently been posted, which is also worthy of attention later on, by a Lieutenant Colonel Gibson, who has declared this phenomenon a hoax, which would be worthy of discussing. But if you read his letter, which is available in many locations now, as well as my site, the Lieutenant Colonel makes 2 points. He says that, number one, contrails form normally a wingspan distance behind the aircraft. That's significant because the observations repeatedly and clearly show that the formation zone, the formation region, is much closer to the aircraft, usually right in the stabilizer region, and sometimes coming right off the wing, as we have discussed with some of the most unusual photos last time.
Yeah, and those photos are available at carnicom.com for all of you who'd like to see them. We call them mega sprayers, and take a look, folks. Prepare to be amazed.
So by the Air Force's own statement, there is a contradiction in the physical formation of the trails we're speaking of relative to normal contrails, which stand for condensed trail. And chemtrail logically stands for chemical trail, and they are both aptly and properly named. And the last point made by Lieutenant Colonel Gibson also is he clearly states that contrails normally dissipate rapidly. If the Air Force itself says that, then why would we be suddenly encountering a basically barrage of trails which do not dissipate quickly? Why would that be? And so these are 5 logical reasons why it can rather easily be established that we know that we're not dealing with water vapor. And at some point you have to settle that issue and you move on, which is where we are now. There really is, in the court of law, it will have to be proven. But the facts are there. The facts are evident
sure.
for anyone who wishes to investigate them. And there's no need to belabor that point for 2 more years.
Agreed. You've just laid it on the table, and I would be very confident submitting that to any jury as providing at least compelling, if not overwhelming, circumstantial evidence. But you've got the science to undermine that, or underpin it, rather, and we're there. So stand by, Cliff. We have to take another quick break. Come right back with Clifford Carnicom as we continue our update on the chemtrail crisis over America. Welcome back. I'm Jeff Rance. Glad you're here. Clifford Carnicom is my guest. His brilliant and indispensable website, carnicom.com, is there, linked right to his name on the homepage. Go there, spend some time, educate yourselves, and listen closely. Okay, Clifford, go right ahead.
Thank you, Jeff. To finish that last segment, I have also conducted a study into honestly, sincerely trying to learn. That is my objective. I want to learn, and I want the truth, and I want to answer the questions. And I've conducted a study on the physics of contrails, and in agreement with the Air Force statement that I just previously made, that by their own admission, contrails normally dissipate very quickly, I have looked into the physics of water vapor at that altitude and what's expected to happen to it. And I have developed a model that basically estimates the length of time that a contrail is expected to last, based on the assumption that it's water vapor. I won't go into the technical details of it, but in general, that model becomes a function of the size of the particles. The what I call the heat of transformation, the amount of heat that it takes to melt ice, bring it up to freezing point and then melt it. And then secondly, a source of heat, a primary source of heat being the solar radiation. If you look at the results of that model, they agree exactly with what we expect. It agrees exactly with our historical observations for the last 50 years. Contrails composed of water vapor will, without exception, let me qualify myself, will almost without exception dissipate in a matter of seconds. The longest case I have is a couple of minutes.
Right.
And this is based on the solid physics, which I truly have tried to dig into and understand what is happening. To best of my ability, this is the model that I create, and the model matches exactly what we have been seeing for 50 years. The logical conclusion then, if the results, the observations do not satisfy the model and the reasoning, then it is not water vapor. So, you know, stack it up as number six. And if anyone in the audience wants an interesting challenge, it's to try to find a specific model. And when I say specific, I mean quantitative. Try to find a detailed, specific, quantitative model on contrail formation on the net and have fun with that. And there's a reason for that, I believe, because if you dig into the physics, the math, and the chemistry of contrail dissipation, it simply does not satisfy what we're observing, and there's a reason that that might want to be pulled off, because it's physically impossible to see what we're seeing based on these conventional physics and chemistry.
Right.
Okay.
Very well presented, and as logical as it can be. Yep.
I mean, I have tried very hard because I'm curious. What are the algorithms? They're out there. There are many references to them. There are contrail prediction algorithms that have been developed by the military because they're necessary. Try to find one specifically, not generally. There's one of the things that I've learned is that there is a lot of general information that's floating around. There are several studies talking about persistent contrails, and when you start digging into these things, you'll find at the level available, at least in my research, they're at a very general nature. And when you try to get the quantitative models, they simply aren't there, or they disagree with the observations which are apparent.
Right.
Okay. So I think the conversation now would naturally take a shift because people will have to decide that for themselves. But for the audience that has made that decision or wishes to go further, if you accept that the material we are speaking of being emitted without consent, incidentally, is not water vapor, the natural question is, the next question is, what is it? That's your next question.
Yeah,
and
sure is.
That's where I am now. There's no point right now in carrying on the previous discussion for another, 2 years. Let us ask, what is it? And this is what I'd like to talk about tonight, is where I'm at in answering that question.
Okay.
There are, in a general way, there are three physical forms of material that are commonly being reported with this phenomenon over the last 2 years. These three forms of material are a fibrous material, incredibly fine, measured down at 2 to 3 tenths of a micron in size.
Boy, is that thin.
It's,
okay.
It's an incredible number. Asbestos is on the order of 2 to 3 microns.
Mm-hmm.
You're
wow.
talking about something, a tenth of asbestos, and you ask yourself and your audience, how are the health hazards of asbestos regarded? And we're speaking of material which is a fraction of that size. So this is physical form number one. And when I say this, this is now not a single case. I have three physical samples of this nature, two of which I have looked at under the microscope and one which is pending. But visually and all, they all are exactly of the same nature.
Okay, and we're headed to a break, but you have three different samples from three different locations, I assume.
On that part, that's right. Do we have time to finish these three categories?
We'll do it, and we have to take a break.
Okay.
We'll come right back, but you've again set the stage. We'll transition through the break, come back and finish that. Keep that in mind, the size of these very, very thin threads, if you will, coming down, much smaller than asbestos, which poses a major health hazard, as many of you well know. Be right back with Clifford Carnicom in just a couple minutes. Glad you're here. And back with Clifford Carnicom talking about chemtrails, which I've got more email coming in. I'll pick a couple more as we go through the next hour and a half and bring you more from our great site visitors and show listeners out there who are watching this with anger, with rage, with utter consternation. All right, Clifford, go ahead, please.
In repetition, Jeff, and thank you again for giving me the opportunity to be on your show.
Sure, and please go ahead and repeat anything you want. You can't say it too much.
In repetition, there are three forms of material that are being reported on a consistent and across the nation to other countries as well. And these three forms are a fiber, submicron fiber, a gel form, literally just a gel.
That's a goo, we can call it too, yeah.
Right. And the last would be a powder or a crystal form. And the conversation we have tonight, at least for the immediate future, will focus on the last of these three, because that's the field I've been most involved with. Each of those three forms is worthy of an entire discussion in itself. They truly are. And just briefly on the first two, the fiber and the gel, I will mention some of the characteristics that are being observed with these forms of material. In the fibrous material, which has been received from two samples, the two have been looked at under the scope from different locations, different parties, different times. And this is not to throw a scare factor into this equation. It's simply to acknowledge the reality and the fact of what has been observed. In addition to the remarkable size of this fiber, which stands as its own unique health hazard, which certainly is worthy of investigation, there are biological components that have been identified within that fibrous material. It's an amazing event. There are blood cells, there are red blood cells, both congregated as well as individual.
Human?
Yes. By all information which is given to me, I was a witness to the observation of this material under a very high-quality microscope. To the best of this person's ability, who is a doctor, by the way, this was human blood cell material.
And what in the world is it doing falling down on us? Okay.
Exactly. So it's simply, remember, one of the needs of the American people on this issue is not to prove it. It never has been to prove it. It's to establish a basis for formal investigation. That's the duty of the American public. If you have a murder in your neighborhood, your duty is not to solve the murder. Your duty is to report the murder. Your duty is to provide evidence regarding the crime. That is what needs to be done by the American people. This is evidence. It is significant, and therefore it warrants investigation. That's the fibrous material. And by the way, the EPA and everyone in the United States should know, should understand, that this material, in all good faith and earnest effort, was sent to Carol M. Browner, who is the administrator of the United States Environmental Protection Agency.
You bet, the number one woman in charge of protecting us.
It was sent to her for the specific purpose of identification of the material and to disclose the results to the American people.
Yep.
That material, number one, has not even been acknowledged by her, even though the letter was sent by certified mail and it is known to have been received. And further, there is no action on her part to perform the steps that she's obligated to do. And the American public needs to be aware, needs to know that the action, the appropriate action for identification has been taken, and there is no adequate response.
We're being stiffed, rebuffed, ignored, and ultimately sold out, folks, by our own public agencies, and the top dog in that agency, Ms. Browner, ought to be kicked out the back door or the front door. This is ridiculous.
And the pressure needs to be applied. People need to understand that they have a role in this. It's not just collecting information. It's to be aware that this is the fact and to get a satisfactory explanation for the lack of action. In my book, it's called negligence at this stage. The second form, the gel material, I have actually seen now 3 physical samples of this material myself. In any of these samples that I'm talking about, there are scores to hundreds of reports which come through. But again, talk is cheap, and it's best to act upon that which you can see. The gel reports come in commonly and have acted for several years. But I have seen physical samples 3 times. The first one was really most unusual, and then, you know, it's the type of thing that I had to pass off at the time, and that's when I was driving through Albuquerque. This stuff landed on our car while we were driving on a trip to vacation.
Uh-huh.
And it caught our interest certainly enough to where we pulled off on the side of the road and inspected it, and, you know, actually did collect some, but conditions weren't good for that because we were on a time table. But certainly the nature of the material was observed and the peculiarity of the method of delivery and this type of thing. That sat for several months. And then over the last, call it 2 to 3 months, I've received 2 samples, and physical samples, and their descriptions match exactly what I experienced. Now, that second sample that came through was extremely small, very limited material to work with.
Mm-hmm.
They had put it in a plastic bag, and I had to use the bag itself as the slide for the microscope because there wasn't enough to transfer onto a slide. But when that material was seen, and these photographs are all on the web. I take photographs under the microscope,
mm-hmm.
and I put this information on my site
right.
for the people to see.
Right.
And in that second sample, that was the first time that, you know, it had been observed. There were some cellular structures that were appearing in there, and I simply presented that information and really didn't go a whole lot further with it, simply partly because of the limited amount of the material and also the difficult conditions under which it was being observed. A third sample has come in more recently, and that sample has again been observed under the microscope, and there's a link to that prominent link. I think it's called Gel Components on the site.
Mm-hmm.
And this time, there's enough to see without any problem. And all I can say is that there is clearly a structure within the gel form. I would classify it as a cellular structure of some type repeated through this material. It's throughout the material, you'll see a varying circular arrangement. Almost looks like a lava flow or something like that if you were to expand it. The magnification is about 500 times on what I have. And then in addition to that, there is a cellular structure, much smaller. I think the size of that I have in the neighborhood of 10 microns or so. There is a cellular structure in there, which is interspersed throughout the material. So there's two forms of structure and organization consistently through that gel. This is airborne gel, which is collected on the ground. Once again, an adequate basis for investigation exists.
You bet.
Okay?
Yep.
I mean, it does. And the sooner that issue is forced, the better, because it repeats itself over and over and over. We're not talking about an isolated case. The last one would be the powder or crystal form. And this is the one I'll talk about the most tonight. And it's actually the most elusive of the 3 forms,
uh-huh.
The most difficult to see and to find.
We have, Clifford, about 3 minutes until the break. Do you want to pause on that one and begin it after the top of the hour and maybe plug something else into the narrative right now or get started on it? It's your choice.
Sure, that's fine. Let's start this one after the break. And I think what I'd like to do in that brief time left then is interject a letter which has been written by a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force.
Yep, got it up on my site and your site, and please go right ahead.
And give the individual the due notice that he receives. This member of our armed forces has put forth a letter to the American public stating that chemtrails are a hoax. And he says very clearly that this hoax was thoroughly, you know, we'll have to dig up the exact words, but basically that this was thoroughly and adequately investigated and researched and explained by the major media, as well as universities across the nation.
Sure thing, pal. Right? This is a Lieutenant Colonel, active Air Force, a mouthpiece for the establishment.
This is his claim. Now, when I saw this letter, you know, you have a gut reaction, but literally almost one of the first things I did was get out a dictionary, because I was looking for a way to avoid calling this a lie. I literally got out the dictionary and I said, what can I do? Because I know this is a strong word and I don't take it lightly. And I looked and I looked and I looked, and the simple fact is there was no other word that truly stated what had happened. This statement is simply a lie. It has not been investigated by the media in any significant fashion, and it has not been investigated by serious professionals across the country, including medical doctors, meteorologists, chemists.
Universities, academic, it's nothing. Nobody has taken this on seriously.
The statement is a falsehood and is stated as such.
We call it a bald-faced lie. Now, in certainly, I guess you'd call it counterpoint to that. There is another lieutenant colonel in the Air Force who has submitted pictures and a statement, which is up on my website. It's to be read and considered in comparison with this lie put forth to all of us by our own military, not the first. And I want you all to understand that. I'm moving it right back up to the top of my headlines. It should be up there. James is working on it right now. The lieutenant colonel, U.S. Air Force, retired, who said... And, well, we'll get into that in just a couple minutes. My guest is Clifford Carnicom. His website is www.carnicom.com. And for those of you new to the issue of chemtrails, please visit. Please look at the photographs, the aerial photographs. Please look at the microscopic photographs that Clifford has been alluding to. Read the data. Understand what evidence is. Understand what reality is. And make your own decision. Most frustrating thing of all, I think, is to have these things strewn above your head and to grab someone, either a friend or a passerby, and point them up and say, look at that. What do you think that is? And they don't understand. Chemtrails, you tell them. And they say, no, that's just contrails. And then sometimes they'll start to look and they'll start to think, and you do a little more explaining, and they'll say, you know, that's not right. And boy, is that an understatement. Be right back. Hour number two, Clifford Carnicom, in just a few minutes.